Welcome to Canucks Central at Noon. Your Vancouver Canucks live here.
Drops off for Horvat, back to Edler, then to Horvat at the slip. He scores! Bo Horvat in overtime!
On the home of hockey, Sportsnet 650.
Landeskog turned it over to Horvat, right to the slip. Pettersson scores! Is there anything this kid can't do?
Here's Scott Rintoul and Mick Nizar.
Guaranteed win night. That's what we called it last night. Guaranteed win night for the Vancouver Canucks. We just weren't talking about the hockey because the Canucks record on telethon night over the years hasn't been particularly strong. However, we said, and you confirmed it for us, listeners to this show, consumers of Canucks hockey, residents of BC and abroad, you confirmed to us last night that it was guaranteed win night for this province. So I am leading Canucks Central by thanking everybody for helping raise $530,000 for the Canucks for Kids Fund through the telethon last night. I don't know who won the 2020 Toyota Corolla Hybrid, but congratulations to whoever that was. But thank you for your generosity. That smashed last year's total, and that is so much well given and deserved money for people in this province and resources in this province that are worse off. So thank you to everyone out there.
For sure. It was a spectacular job by everyone that put it on, the volunteers that put their time out to do this. Fantastic work by them. And just seeing the numbers roll up and the stories come in from you and Perry to tee those up, they were so heartfelt. And that number is staggering. It shows how much support this team generates to help so many different families. And I thought Elliot Friedman said it best yesterday on the program. It's okay, you know, when fans have this perception of what Vancouver fans are like, and there's all these online debates, and it gets, you know, it can get tough at times online. And when you're talking, at times there's a perception of this fan base. One thing that's never come into question is the generosity of this fan base, ever. Nobody would ever dispute that, and the amount of work that this team does and this franchise does to get out into the community is reciprocated by the fans, and I should say not even just the fans, the people in this community.
Yeah, it's true, and you made a very good point there. People on television, they see Perry and I presenting this stuff, and they see a few people behind us picking up telephones, and they see a couple of stories, but there are all these volunteers at the call center. There are all the people working on the broadcast. There are the people at the Canucks for Kids Fund and BC Children's and Canuck Place Children's Hospice and Canuck Autism Network that over the course of the year are building to this and gathering resources. And you saw some of the companies last night that have flipped checks because they spent the last 365 days, well, leap year 366, I'll give them the benefit of the doubt there. They spent all of that time saying, okay, next year when this time rolls around, we're going to be able to contribute. And we're going to be able to help more people in this province. And I do think, and I don't want this whole show to be about COVID-19, but it's a very real part of our discussion here today. I do think it's a good springboard into when we just look out for each other, we're pretty good.
Yes.
So just look out for each other.
That's the old phrase is, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. It's amazing what a community can accomplish when they're working together. And yesterday was an indication of that.
It certainly was. It's amazing what a hockey team can do when it works together and does all of those little extra things. And I thought desperation rating was equal on both teams last night.
Yeah.
And I know there are some that will look at the shot total. And look, you're entitled to your opinion. If you thought the Canucks got severely outplayed last night, that's your opinion. I thought it was a pretty even hockey game. The coaches thought that was a pretty even hockey game. The fancy stats called that a pretty even hockey game, despite what the shot total may have said, because you had two teams that were in the midst of terrible runs. And it's not surprising to me that this one ended up in a three-point affair, which is decided by a skills contest as opposed to who wants it more, because both teams needed that, wanted it, and it showed last night.
Yeah, for sure. And realistically, again, I know the shot totals were what they are, but 5-on-5, they played them to even. Like, the Islanders looked lethal on the penalty kill, or perhaps better said, the Canucks looked confused on the penalty kill. They gave ample space to Barzal or whoever wanted to work on the power play, and that led to a lot of the shots. But 5-on-5, fairly even.
Man, that 5-on-3 early in the game,
yeah.
Pretty big turning point in this one. It could have gone off the rails there. Canucks leading at the time. They have to kill off an extended 5-on-3, which they do. Kill off the 5-on-4 as well. Now, they did give up what felt like a power play goal later in the game. But if we're talking about developments and things that perhaps you can use going forward, special teams last night is a part of it for me. They got a power play goal from Bo Horvat. Eh, didn't get all of it. Doesn't matter. It found the back of the net.
Yeah.
Penalty kill was better. They had on that it was better. And a lot of that had to do with the goaltender.
I was going
to
say.
A lot of that had to do with the goaltender. It wasn't because they were aggressive enough. And I did think that they got closed down too compact too quickly at times.
Yes.
So,
but that's been the issue all year.
Yes. I just think that from a result standpoint, sometimes you need a result to convince yourself that you're better than maybe the overall play has been and just give you a little confidence. Bit.
Right. But how long have I been talking about the penalty kill being an issue?
I agree.
Right?
I know. And I don't understand it sometimes because there are some very good penalty killers out there
that
are not doing the right thing at times.
And
Tyler Mott, that guy's a great penalty killer. What's he doing down between the two defensemen in front of the net at times?
They actively try to be passive. And so I don't think it's a they don't have the players for it. I think it's a scheme-based issue. They try to. And the philosophy of what it looks like they're trying to do makes sense to me. Stop passes going into that slot or stop passes going across. Like, that's a good thing to aspire to because that's how we know goals are created. Moving the goalie laterally and your chance of scoring goes up 30%. But when you don't put any pressure on the outsides, these players are too skilled. When you give them time and space, they can thread a needle. I get your sticks in the right spot. I get all of that. They can still thread the needle. Matt Barzal's highly skilled. He can put it down to Anders Lee at the other side. He can put it to anyone he wants. And the other thing that happens is they just wind up going around you, and it creates movement, it creates disruption, and then it goes back the other way, and there's your confusion. So it's way too passive for me.
Is that Thatcher Demko's most important game as a pro?
Yeah.
You can argue whether it was his best game or not, shot volume and number of saves and how many goals allowed, but given the circumstances of where this team is at, that to me is his most important game to this point of his NHL career.
I'm not saying I know the answer to this, because I don't, but it's something I want to pitch to Aldi on Friday when we talk to him. There was a lot of five-alarm athletic saves, right? So I'm curious how the goalie guys look at this and say, you know, we talk so much about Jacob Markstrom, how the shots get just sucked in, right? They're right into the crest, and he's always ahead of the play. Do we view this as like, wow, look at all those saves? And then a finer technique of a goalie would see it as, okay, he's still a little behind the play, but he's making the saves. I'm just curious. I don't know the answer. I'm just curious if that's how it's viewed.
It's interesting you say that because there have been games where Thatcher Demko has made spectacular saves, and I felt it was because he overcommitted.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't feel that way last night. And again, I'm not a trained goalie guy like you. I didn't feel like that last night. When I'm seeing the splits to get cross crease on what is a quick cross ice pass, one timer, how did he stop that? That to me isn't, oh man, he overcommitted one way. That is just, how did he stop that? Great save. He's dialed in tonight. I wrote it down on my paper. Like, you know, I was at the telethon, so I'm watching from the concourse last night. I just wrote down, Demko dialed in. It was evident. I know he gave up the early goal, but that wasn't on him. That first one wasn't on him. There's one later in the game that he'd like back. He was dialed in last night, man. He was great. He really was. And then in the shootout, they needed a performance like that in the shootout. And he's been really good. What, he's 10 for 12 as far as stopping shooters go this season?
Yeah, no, that was a strong performance, in the shootout. But, okay. Like, obviously you take it, and his athleticism, which he clearly has, was clearly on display yesterday, which was a performance that they needed. Again, for Thatcher Demko right now, style points don't matter. For the team itself, you want to see strong, compact play and the type of play that's leading towards the playoffs. And can that translate into round one and beyond? But for Thatcher Demko right now, his job is literally pass or fail. That's it. We're not really grading him of, oh, that was a B+. It's if you make the saves and they get 2 points, that's a pass. If you don't, that's a fail. That's all he's being graded on to me right now.
If you hear me coughing in the background, I am not irresponsible, showed up at work sick guy. I took a swig of water in between.
I watched it happen because if it wasn't that,
you were kicking me out.
I would have been running out. I was like, all right, cool, enjoy your show.
Later. This is where Rintoul will be sleeping for the next little while and nobody else will be going in the studio. It's
my time to shine.
Yeah, here you go, Raja. Jump in, man. It's all on you. Yeah, I thought Demko was great last night, but you're right. It's a good point we can follow up on with Alex Aulb. Zach MacEwen scores again last night. Mm-hmm. Did you think this development was possible for him this season? Because I'm not going to say that he's the most prominent player, but the numbers as far as goals and assists and games played, pretty mm-hmm. impressive so far. It's small sample size, but it's sure. pretty impressive.
And I did think it was a possible, okay, maybe not this level of production, but if you told me at the beginning of the year, hey, do you think Zach MacEwen could be on the NHL roster, bottom six? Yeah, of course, because how much have we talked about the growth of this team is going to come from inside, right? JT Miller, great acquisition. Tyler Myers, good acquisition. There were some guys from the that were brought in that could improve this team, obviously, but Jacob Markstrom taking a step. Quinn Hughes is taking a step. Elias Pettersson is taking a step. That extends to the AHL. The opportunity was there for everyone. Are you getting better? Are you putting the work in to get better? And what have we heard about Zach MacEwen for 2 years? Yeah, he's getting a little bit better. Yeah, he's getting a little bit. Oh, he's getting a lot better. And now he's centering top line, and he's playing in every role in the AHL. It's taken a while, but that was the path that was set before him. And I think when you ask him, like, he's been very honest, and he said that the team has been very honest with me that if I put in the time, there it was reciprocated. We're not going to quit on you if you're willing to put in the effort. And both sides are reaping the benefits of it now.
I can't quit you. Throw that in there. Well, you know, he's a great example, though, for those other guys in the farm who have admittedly said, I didn't put in enough work. I thought yes. I might be able to be carried by skill. When you promote a player like that, and that player ultimately has some success at the next level, whatever that success may entail, that reinforces the message down on the farm.
You don't think Cole Lynn's noticing that for next season?
Of course he is. Right? Has to be.
And think of the messaging. And I know last 2 years, there was a lot of complaints, and some of it was justified of, hey, is Utica developing enough people? And one of the statements that's always stuck with me that came from Ryan Johnson, Trent Cole, is we don't want to send people up with the intention of coming back down. So, yeah, you can have a short-term guy quickly go up and have a nice 2 weeks, but is he coming back to the NHL? They've taken this long path with Zach MacEwen. But guess what? Zach MacEwen's not going back to the AHL. That conversation's over.
Jim Benning came out and said it.
Yeah.
We think he's an NHL player now.
And now, did it go as quickly as you wanted? Probably not. But that's a graduate from the AHL to the NHL. There's probably going to be another one next year with Cole Lynn. And can you now create the cycle of, hey, we've built this up, this infrastructure of, if we put the time to develop you, when we think you're ready, we do not want to see you again. And that's not a mean thing to say. It's, you're going to the show now. Congratulations. We think you're at a place to do that now.
Scott Rinto, Bick Nizar, get your comments in. Subway text line is 650-650. Andrew Berkshire joins us at the bottom of the hour. We'll talk more with him about what's going on with the Vancouver Canucks and around the NHL as well.
He just wrote a great piece on Elias Pettersson on sportsnet.ca, just talking about, for all the people that thinking that there's some second-half slump coming, the numbers do not bear out that that's going to happen.
Yeah, just slightly below a point per game, probably finishes in and around 80, 82 points as long as he plays the requisite number of games. And at this point, he looks much stronger. Whether the points are there every single night or not, he looks much stronger than he did at this time a year ago. This one comes in. Canucks still in must-win territory, one loss, and they lose control of their destiny. That's very fair, and I would also say they are very cognizant of that. I haven't talked to every player, but Bick, I had an exchange with a member of the organization last night after they won. And I said to him, you know what? You guys needed that.
Oh, yeah.
Good for you for getting it. You guys really needed that win. And I expected to say, yeah, you know, we did this well, obviously. You know what it was? It was, yeah, we did. We have to win the next game. We have to beat Arizona. That's the first thing. It was in the exact same breath. It wasn't, hey, let's soak this in a little bit. Let's have all the good feels. No, no, no. This only matters if we take care of business in Arizona and Colorado and Winnipeg. In the totality of those three games, we better get more wins than losses or else it doesn't matter that much.
Absolutely. It gave them reasons not to panic right now. And all it did is just give you a minute to breathe and say, okay. But you have to reset and refocus. You know, they didn't achieve a goal yesterday. They just plugged the boat from sinking yesterday. Achieving the goal is making the playoffs. So you have really nothing to reflect upon. You have to keep moving forward. You have to keep looking ahead of what's next. And what's next is another opportunity to get 2 points against a division rival, a team that you would officially knock out of the playoffs, basically. Like, I can't imagine Arizona is going to rattle off 11-0 to launch themselves into the playoffs. So you win tomorrow versus Arizona, that's one less team that now can now leapfrog you. It's down to Minnesota, Winnipeg, Vancouver, Nashville, Dallas, Calgary, that group, if you win tomorrow.
Jalen Chatfield has been recalled from the Utica Comets. That is not surprising to me, given Chris Tanev exited the game last night. Now, Jalen Chatfield's not the guy who's going to go in for Chris Tanev.
No.
That would be Jordy Benn if Chris Tanev cannot go, and I wonder if he's even on this trip, Bick. They're flying charter, so I don't have that confirmed right now, but my suspicion is Chris Tanev isn't making the trip to Arizona, and by default, Colorado, as they are back-to-back games on Thursday and Friday. Look, we can get more information. We can confirm that when it comes down, but Chatfield gets recalled. He's going to be the extra guy. Jordy Benn goes back into the lineup on the right side most likely, and we'll see what they do with the pairings. I wondered if Benn might be an option simply because Fantenberg hasn't been great and wasn't great again last night.
Mm-hmm.
But there has been a reticence to put Benn in on the left side. And the most recent game...
The right side?
In place of Fantenberg.
Oh, okay, yes.
So the most recent time we saw Jordy Benn was playing the right side, and could argue it was one of his best games of the year.
Yeah.
So it almost feels like if they have some trouble on the right side, that's where Ben's going into the lineup as opposed to the left side.
But I guess, yeah, you're right. The pairings matter. Is it a direct swap for Chris Tanev? Or do you bump Tyler Myers up and let him and Hughes go together? It probably makes the most sense to put him with Fantenberg and then just lean on those other two pairings.
And just so we're clear, this is an emergency recall, which means, and we know this, there are a couple other defensemen who are playing through things and battling through things. Because when you recall somebody emergency-wise, there has to be at least the possibility that you can't dress your NHL lineup. It would just be a regular recall if not, but this is an emergency recall. Listen, Quinn Hughes has been banged up for a little while, so you can speculate that it's him or others, but this tells me Chris Tanev's not playing on this trip. That's what it tells me. I don't have that confirmed. I'm just saying what it tells me.
You're getting to a point now, I think, where you do have to lean on your top three lines, your top two pairings. So if this means Benn draws in and less minutes for them, I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I'm okay with that as well, especially the style of game you're likely to encounter tomorrow night in Arizona. And you do not want to play the Coyotes game. You would much rather play your own game. And that's why, to me, the response last night after the Islanders opened the scoring was critical to everything.
Okay, well, let me ask you this question. Because I was thinking about that last night. And yes, it was a high event game.
Oh, yeah, it was.
But didn't they feel more comfortable?
So certain aspects of their team felt more comfortable.
Yeah.
Certain aspects.
But more so than, say, the Columbus game, where they, you know, played well.
Okay, offensively, they felt more comfortable.
Yeah.
However, I would say this. Watching that game last night, as time continued to wind down, because of the style of game it was, every time the Islanders entered the Canucks zone, it felt like, are they getting one here? They're going to get great chances, and Barzal seems due. And we saw what Eberle did earlier, and Brock Nelson's working on a hat trick. So in one sense, I agree with you. Pushing forward, they looked a lot more comfortable. And then their own end, and I think the fan base was a reflection of this, it felt less comfortable.
Yeah. And I guess this is what I want to pitch to the people listening. 650. Here's my question. Are you okay with those styles of games, no matter the result? And I know it was entertaining, and you kind of are at a point where, okay, 2 points matters, but They leave themselves almost no margin of error in a style game that they played versus Columbus. And they didn't look... They played well, but they didn't look comfortable. It didn't look like they were playing like themselves. Yesterday, they looked like they were playing like themselves. There was creativity off the rush. Obviously, we look at that Toffoli goal. And yes, it's super high event. And yes, it requires 5 goals. But it does feel like they can score 5 easier than they can defend 2.
I think that's fair. The obvious answer is in between the two.
Of course, that's the obvious answer. But I don't think that reality exists for the season.
And that's what they're striving for. It's results season. Honestly, it's result season with this team.
Yeah.
There is a time for entertainment, and I'm here for it, but I'm not sure that's the time right now. By hook or by crook, they need wins. It doesn't matter.
I feel like they're more likely to get wins this way than they are trying to batten down the hatches.
And that's fair, but with the caveat you attach to it, hey, win or lose, are you okay if they play that way? I'm not sure people sign up for that right now, because this team, with the way they've pushed some chips in this year, playoffs or bust is what it feels like right now, mm-hmm. doesn't it? Listen, if they don't make the playoffs, we're going to tell a tale about a season of progress, and this guy did that, and what does JT Miller mean for this team moving forward, and here's where they got to improve. Well, at least they got a draft pick and a strong draft. We're going to have that conversation. But, man, with the opportunity that exists in the West right now and the position that they put themselves in, it's results season.
I just feel like I'm more comfortable betting on that style of play. And, yes, I know it's high leverage, and you might wind up going broke. But just given where they are right now, 13 games to go, how do you maximize your opportunity to win? I kind of feel like it's that style of game. And you might go 2-11. You might go 4-9. And you might also go 10-3, just because that feels like who they are more so than anything.
And maybe your answer to that question out there in listener land, text us 650-650 Subway text line, has more to do with your confidence that Thatcher Demko can replicate performances mm-hmm. like that for as long as he needs to start. Not every single game, but more often than not. If you have confidence in that, maybe you're more likely to answer that question one way or the other. I thought Ian McIntyre, in one line, in one sentence, in his post-game recap, encapsulated everything that this season is and everything this team has been to this point. And here's the line. Tuesday's game was evidence of the young talent, scoring depth, and goaltending that should get the Canucks into the Stanley Cup playoffs for the first time since 2015, but also all the deficiencies in defending that could prevent them from making it. It's a great line.
Yeah, that's awesome. A couple of texts here. My heart can't handle too many more games like that. That's from Leaf Hater Steve. Unsigned text here. Sure, the game is entertaining. Sorry, this is from Christian. Sure, the game is entertaining. I would rather watch a game like last night where I feel like I'm watching playoff hockey. The chances were there. And sure, at the end of the day, they won because they played better. Play like this the rest of the season, you could look at a playoff run. I like last night's game. Let's do that again. I just feel like more people would sign up for that. And I know there's heart attack kind of game because you're constantly heads moving and the puck's going up and down the ice.
I think more people would sign up for that if they knew Jacob Markstrom was going to come back for the stretch run.
Well, that's part of it. That's absolutely part of this.
And we don't know where he's at. Today is supposed to be reevaluation day. Shockingly, we were not invited to the reevaluation. We did not get a call from Jim Benning that said, hey, guys, would you like to broadcast on location where we are reevaluating Jacob Markstrom? Have him come join you live after we have that evaluation. So we don't know to this point in time. There's been nothing released. Obviously, people close to the team are going to try to get that information.
We'll Jacob, see what was the procedure like? Oh, you know, the doctor gave 110%. And
we'll see what the team does. Listen, Markstrom was going to be a part of the telethon broadcast last night, and that was changed. And part of me thinks that had – actually, a lot of me thinks that had to do with all of the preventative measures that are being taken to keep the players not quarantined, but at lower risk as possible. Are you going to walk Jacob Markstrom up into a crowded concourse during a hockey game and have him come on the broadcast? Are you going to put him at that risk and then potentially the team at risk? I think it has a lot more to do with that than trying to hide any injury information.
Yeah.
But people want to know. And they want to know how that skate went. And they want to know how he's feeling today. And we'll find out, hopefully, in the very near future, what that reevaluation entailed.
Absolutely. And the concerns over things like COVID-19 are going to increase quickly here.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And we are seeing that as soon as tomorrow, the Columbus Blue Jackets could be playing a game without fans. Now, we will find out when that declaration comes down, and something we're going to talk about next just before Andrew Berkshire joins us, but you've just seen the NBA say, Warriors-Nets, nobody's going to be at that game tomorrow other than the players and staff. That's happening tomorrow down in San Francisco. Washington State, which is very close to us, no more than 250 people together. So that includes the Vancouver Giants game this weekend, which is going to be played in front of no fans. That includes an XFL game that's going to be played in front of no fans. The Mariners have already moved their games. We don't have the details as to exactly where they're going, what they're doing, but they're supposed to open the season. No, We look forward to playing Mariners baseball back here in April. We'll let you know more as soon as we know.
It's we're kind of in a wait and see pattern as far as what happens locally here, and I wouldn't be surprised if there's impact here soon.
Andrew Berkshire has just written a great piece on Elias Pettersson. We will pick his brain on EP40 and much more surrounding the Vancouver Canucks. Your text messages, welcome as always, 650-650. That is your Subway text line on your home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Now more of Canucks Central on the official home of the Vancouver Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Don't panic. No one is calling for panic. Just be aware. I think that's where we are. Be aware and don't take big risks right now. Not the greatest thing to do as far as your health and public health.
So you're talking about the Canucks right now.
Oh, no. They'll take risks.
Yes.
That's what they'll do. You're imploring them to.
Well, I'm just asking.
You want more high danger chances against.
I'm just asking.
I'm kidding.
If you're okay with that, Dan texting in, 650-650. I mean, the team is built around star forwards and Hughes. Our bread and butter is offense. So I say double down, play to our identity. I'd rather we score and do our best playing the same way than try to lock it down because Demko is in instead of Markstrom.
Responsible aggression. We've been calling for it all year. That's what we would like to see. Whether this team is capable of achieving it on a night-in, night-out basis this year, that remains up in the air because that has been the question for a long time. And it harkens back to early in the season when they get a third period lead and then would look all out of sorts trying to quote unquote lock it down.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't suit their personality. It doesn't necessarily suit their personnel, even though you know it's the most logical way to approach certain situations within this game.
Yeah, and that responsible aggression is really what we're talking about here. I'm not sure if this team is built to lock it down in their own zone. I think they can lock it down in the neutral zone because they've got mobile guys laterally specifically who can, you know, close gaps, close lanes down of how to enter the zone. So perhaps the best way for this team to play is play less in their own zone and just hang on to the puck. That's one of the things I've noticed, actually, that Horvat line at times yesterday had cycle time, had zone time. That's huge. And if you can just do that more, like that to me is responsibly aggressive. Of we have the puck in their end, and we're just going to cycle it. We're going to make them work. And by proxy, we're going to defend less. That would be a huge step for this team.
It's the opposite approach of what should be happening right now with the spread of COVID-19, which is responsible caution.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're preaching. Nobody's preaching panic, but responsible caution. And I think that's reflected by our employer's decision today. And we'll give you this news right now. Hometown Hockey was supposed to be in North Van this weekend. It's not going to be. And Hometown Hockey has, in fact, canceled its final three stops, which were North Vancouver, Campbell River, and Edmonton. And the statement reads, while disappointing, the well-being of the community and employees is a top priority. These broadcasts with Ron McLean and Tara Sloan will continue as scheduled on Sundays from the Sportsnet studios. They look forward to continuing to highlight the stories that matter most to these passionate hockey communities. You'll still see the stories, but because of everything going on, the climate we're working in right now, it makes sense. You're trying to limit travel in general as much as possible.
Yeah, it's unfortunate and it's sad because these communities deserve their opportunities. And I'm sure they're going to come back next year because three great hockey communities, right? Edmonton, Campbell River, and North Vancouver. And they deserve to have the fanfare of having Rogers Hometown Hockey come in. And it's a great event, but responsibility trumps all right now. And I'm glad that, okay, the broadcast continues and there's so many great stories in these communities here that should see the light of day, and they will. But the whole fanfare of it, we have to be conscious of what's bigger than just the event. And it's that sort of responsibility of we don't want to be a factor in more cases. And exactly what we're talking about, responsible
caution.
Caution.
And that's all it is. That's all it is. It's not asking people to barricade themselves inside their homes. Just don't take unnecessary risks right now. And I think that's fair. And I think a lot of people in our community are looking at that right now with the edict that has come down in Washington State of 250 people or more, sorry, you're not going ahead with that event. And a lot of our listeners travel down to Washington, maybe not on a daily basis, but certainly a weekly basis. And some of those trips will be canceled. It's not essential probably for most people. We could see a game in Columbus as soon as tomorrow, Bick, that doesn't involve spectators. We're going to see one in the NBA down in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. We're going to see one in San Jose. They haven't made that official, but I think everybody can see where this is pointing. And in Ohio, they are going to come out with more than a recommendation in the next 24 to 36 hours. If that happens in advance of the Blue Jackets game tomorrow, not playing in front of spectators. And it's a very real possibility in a lot of NHL cities. I would say, while it's not close to that right now, it's a very real possibility here in Vancouver.
Yep, and it's something we have to accept. You just have to accept it.
Yeah.
And just like we were talking about at the top of the show, last night was an example. We came together as a community to raise a lot of money for the Canucks for Kids Telethon, right? And we did something together for a bigger cause. Yes, you want to be in the rink. I get it. But there's something bigger at hand. So you got to come together to solve the issue.
Andrew Berkshire, I'm sure, agrees with that. He joins us here on Canucks Central. Andrew, thank you very much for doing this. I know you were listening on the line. I imagine you would echo the sentiments we just sent out.
Of course, yeah. I mean, at this point, like, I think some of the projections have been a little bit outlandish, but I think every strong reaction that, you know, countries and businesses have had is only going to benefit everyone overall, right? Like, the most that they can limit this pandemic, the better. Obviously, if the current death rate holds, it's something that you have to avoid at all costs, right? So public spaces with large crowds, just not a good mix.
And as fanatical as sports aficionados can get, and I have seen some of the comments, I think everybody realizes this is for the greater good, though it is not lost on Leafs Nation or Canucks Nation, as I have seen online, that this could occur during a year where these teams are getting back into the playoffs and are looking at meaningful games and perhaps playing in front of empty arenas.
Yeah, I think, you know, regular season, most people are pretty much on board that, like, you know, if you had a ticket that you'd bought, it sucks. It's a really unfortunate situation, although in the grand scheme of things, you know, ultimately doesn't matter that much. I think maybe a lot of rabid fans might change their minds when it comes to playoff hockey, right? If it gets into there and things haven't cooled down and it's still everything on lockdown, I think you'll see some people get a little bit more upset.
I'm curious what the response would be. Is, like, would you trade not being there and nobody being there for a Stanley Cup, right? Like, it'd be such a weird moment because we all dream of, oh, I wish my team won a Stanley Cup on home ice. How great would that be? Now, what would the image be like of your captain skating around and there's nobody in the stands?
Yeah, they just play crowd noise through the speaker or something. And it's worse than that even, because if you think about it, there'd be no, you know, Stanley Cup parties at a bar in the area. There'd be no Stanley Cup parade. All those things would be, you know, high chance of transmission of COVID-19. So you really, it's almost like this phantom thing that, like, you won and you know you won, but everything's a private celebration. It'd be very strange.
Yeah, it is. And who knows? Look, none of us are doctors on this show, but hopefully if people do the smart, responsible thing here in the next little while, hopefully containment happens relatively quickly and this ends up being something that is very temporary as opposed to conditions that we'll be living through for the foreseeable future, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, absolutely. It's hopefully going to be taken care of by the time that we don't have to really talk about this in the playoffs, but it doesn't seem like it's going to be a quick solution, right? Most of the people who actually know what they're talking about seem to be very cautious about this going into the summer.
Let's talk about Elias Pettersson. Andrew Berkshire joining us. He writes for Sportsnet. You can find his work on sportsnet.ca. If Canucks fans were thinking about playoffs this year, they knew Elias Pettersson would have to be a big part of it in the month of March. There are some that were wondering, is he not producing well enough? Is he going to hit that wall that he hit last year? What has your research led you to believe?
Yeah, I mean, when I first talked about it with the editors at Sportsnet, they talked about, you know, his point production fell off in the end of the year last year. And I was like, oh, well, you know, points are not necessarily the best predictor. So I wanted to figure out if he actually did fall off significantly last year, and he did. The eye test was not wrong on that one. His production did fall off for a reason. His playmaking fell off by, I think, about 50%, and his shooting fell off by about 30% from the slot. So it was a pretty stark contrast with the first half of the season, where he was one of the most dangerous even strength players in the league. So there was a lot of attrition last year for Elias Pettersson, and I know he had some injuries, and you know, players kind of tried to get at him because he's a little guy. He's pretty good at shaking checks, but you know, still, when guys are going after you and you're a star player over the year, when you're coming from, you know, not playing 82 games a year, it can be a little bit rough, and things did fall apart for him. So I looked into this year, and, you know, is there a similar pattern going on? Is he going to fall off in the second half? Is he still struggling with the schedule? And as it turns out, no. No, he's not. He's actually getting better as the year's gone on, and it seems like it's a pretty linear fashion that he's getting better in. It's just continuing to get better as the season goes on, basically each month. So Elias Pettersson is not someone to worry about at all. I think he's going to, you know, just continue ascending the stardom scale exactly like we thought he would when he first broke into the NHL.
I love the analytics and all that. And one of the tricks or things that you have to learn is applying the numbers to what we see on ice, right? And just recently, you know, he hasn't been taking as many shots as you would expect. However, it feels like we know he's very selective when it comes to shooting. And what's fascinating about what you put out is going through the charts is his perimeter shots are virtually nil in this calendar year. How, and when you watch it, it's like, okay, that feels right because he's not just taking volume shots. He's trying to create better shots.
Yeah. And that's obvious. Like you said, that's the way he's always played. He's always been a quality shooter over quantity, but it's really interesting how much he's really buckled down on that. And not just in terms of like, what he's getting on net, because obviously you're going to have, in terms of on net shots, it's easier to hit the net from closer than it is from further away, right? So that number will always be a higher percentage from the dangerous areas. But in his shot attempts, even, he's one of the top five forwards in the NHL in percentage of total shot attempts from the slot. He's at about 71%, which is nuts. And he doesn't settle. You know, and I think there's something about that, like, superstar quality that you're always looking for the best chance. You know, like, in certain situations, you know, you'll get criticism for being too fancy or whatever, not mm-hmm. just putting it on net from certain sectors of hockey media, for sure, or old-school hockey people. But I love his killer instinct. You know, I love that he's always looking to improve where he's shooting from, where his line mates are shooting from. And I really think that him and JT Miller have something special.
Is playing that way hurting his overall production?
I don't think so, because if you look at the expected shooting or expected goal rate for perimeter shots, you're looking at anything outside of the slot is about a 3% chance of beating a goaltender. And that's before you factor in the fact that those shots are often missed shots or blocked shots. So being choosy, as long as you're not being so choosy that you never get shots at all, is not a big problem. I think, you know, Elias Pettersson will probably never be a, you know, 45 goal guy. He might, you know, hit that one season and have like a crazy outlier year. But I think he's probably going to settle in like 30 goal, 50 assist kind of situation if he's a point per game guy. And that ability to get those better quality shots and sneak in close to the net and pounce on rebounds and set up players for great chances as well with some great cross ice movement. It's a special quality that most players aren't able to produce consistently, and he's already proving that he can.
I know it's a small sample size, but what effect has Tyler Toffoli had on Elias Pettersson's play since joining the team, if any at all? Has it changed much relative to what he was doing before as far as the data goes?
I would assume, I haven't looked at that specifically, but I would assume that it would push Elias Pettersson to make a few more passes and probably a few more passes what SportLogic would classify as east-west instead of slot passes. So like an east-west pass below the hash marks would be from either inside the slot or outside the slot to the other end of the or the other side of the ice, but outside the slot. And Toffoli is a player who shoots from the perimeter more than most players, but he's really good at picking those one-timers. So I would assume that as they get to know each other, Elias would go for more of those passes to try to set up Toffoli on those like big cross ice chances. They're maybe not as good as a slot one-timer, but of course it's a little bit easier to set up outside of the slot than inside the slot. And if you have the ability to get those shots off, you know, it's still a good scoring chance. But Toffoli is unfortunately a relatively low percentage shooter. He's a good volume shooter, but I do wonder if Pettersson can long-term get a higher quality shot out of Toffoli. I think that's the most interesting thing going on there, is if he can elevate Toffoli from just a volume shooter to a volume shooter who also can complete at a league average or better percentage.
Okay, I've got a multi-layered question here for you, because more just than Elias Pettersson, you mentioned something in that article that the Canucks are one of the worst rush teams in the NHL this season, yet here we are that they've got, I think they're 8th in goals for so far this year. Riddle me that, Andrew. I thought it's easier to score when you're creating off the rush.
Yeah, for sure it is. And part of what makes the Canucks the worst rush team in the league is also that they give up a lot off the rush, right? Like, they're very porous at defending their own blue line. That's their biggest defensive weakness. And, I mean, part of the reason why they're still doing great in goal differential is they've got an absolutely killer power play. That top unit is unbelievable. Jacob Markstrom has been, you know, Vezina caliber at the very least. I think if he'd experienced a bit more publicity, he might be even considered a Hart candidate in the same way that Connor Hellebuyck is in Winnipeg. So there's that. And then also there's, you know, the other areas of the game, controlling scoring chances off the cycle, off the forecheck, where the Canucks are actually quite good. So that one area of off the rush, they are the weakest team in the league. But everywhere else, they're decent to good. So it kind of compensates. It's an area where in the playoffs, you kind of get worried a little bit, because it was something that was a problem for the Flames last year. And they were a phenomenal even strength team last year, except for off the rush. And then all of a sudden it was like Colorado keyed in on that and just blitzed them in the first round. So you wonder if Vancouver's susceptible to that because they're so poor at defending off the rush. But if the coaching staff is focused on that and, you know, prepared for teams keying on it, they've got enough strengths in other areas to still be a threat.
So is that creation off the rush a sticky stat year to year? Like, is the continuity there for teams or for systems as they progress year to year?
It's very, very difficult to say, because, you know, some coaching staffs will see that and attempt to address it, and some will just do the same thing over and over again. So it really depends on what the priorities are for the team. Most teams, if they have success, don't try to overhaul systems year over year. They might make tweaks, but it's very rare for a coach, unless there's a coaching change, to, you know, like suddenly not believe in what they're doing, or, you know, unless there's like a big roster change, you know, like sometimes things like that cannot necessarily be systemic, but you have like a certain group of defensemen who are not very mobile and not very good with their sticks at their own blue line, and they just get blitzed all the time off the rush. Or you have defensemen who can't move the puck up, and the forwards try to cheat instead of coming back to help out. And it could be just poor roster construction. But for the most part, I find it difficult to make a prediction for a stat like that year to year, because there is so much potential for change. One player can change it, you know. One change that coaching staff makes can change it. For the Winnipeg Jets last year, for example, they went into the postseason went into the trade deadline one of the worst teams at generating chances off the rush, and then they acquired Kevin Hayes, who is a fantastic player at creating chances off the rush, and that was one of the reasons why they were able to stick in that series against the St. Louis Blues, despite being severely outplayed in the regular season. Just data-wise, they were not even close to the level of Team St. Louis was, but they took them to 6 games because they adjusted and started attacking off the rush a little bit more, and the Blues, one of their weaknesses was defending off the rush. So it was interesting to see how like one player can kind of flip the switch and give you a little bit more versatility.
Andrew, great work on the Elias Pettersson piece, and thank you very much for your time. Appreciate it. Keep up the great work.
It's my pleasure, guys. Thanks for having me on.
That is Andrew Berkshire, sportsnet.ca. Really good piece. Encourage you to read it. It's up right now on sportsnet.ca. I do have to get this news in, and this qualifies as also a promotion for your show. Regular on Sportsnet 650, Patrick Johnson, reporting that the Vancouver Canucks, this is much in the same vein of what the Leafs are doing right now. Chris Johnson reported this today. The Leafs have told all of their scouting staff, no flying right now.
Mm-hmm.
Montreal did the same thing. Listen, if you're in your local region, you can drive to the game. That's one thing, but we're not having you fly. We're going to try to limit risk as far as spread of COVID-19. The Canucks have confirmed to Patrick Johnson that they've told their scouting staff, the current trip you're on, obviously get back home, but after that, limit your further scouting to your local regions. And not a surprising measure. I imagine this will be done all around the National Hockey League, but just to give you something closer to home, how this is affecting the team that you cheer for. And we said this at the outset of the segment. It is a very real possibility. We're talking about games down the stretch that are played in front of an empty Rogers Arena.
Yes, and
again, we're not close to that. We haven't seen the province come out. We haven't seen a mandate yet from the local government.
But just understand that's on the spectrum of possibilities.
Of course.
Here. And I understand the frustrations if that does come to be. However, understand also what we're dealing with here. Have some empathy for what's occurring across the globe. The globe. It's not just relegated to us in our region. It's across the globe. And so these are precautionary measures to not be a conduit to further spreading things and have an understanding that there's something bigger at play here. What we do, Scott, we have a blast and we take it seriously, but let's also recognize this is an avenue of fun. It serves as a distraction. And I know something like this, like the real world still carries on despite us talking about the power play. And for now, the real world is coming to the sports world. That happens.
Yes, it does. And I know that's something you guys will be talking to Patrick Johnson about this afternoon, your Wednesday regular. What else is coming up on the program?
Man, it is a busy day because we'll be at the JCC Sports Dinner. Phil Housley will join us. Getting ready to play Arizona, obviously. But a lot of people make Quinn Hughes-Phil Housley comparisons. We'll talk to him about that. And at the dinner, we'll be talking to keynote speaker Drew Brees, New Orleans Saints quarterback.
Drew Brees, who's that?
Yeah, he's coming up at 6:45.
That's big news.
Yeah, PJ at 5. Phil Housley, still TV determined, but he will be on between 4 and 7 with Andrew Walker and Satir Shah.
That is Can't Miss Radio with Drew Brees. Also Can't Miss Reach Deep coming up next. Dan Riccio, Israel Fair reacting to last night's game and what continues to be a developing situation with COVID-19 and its effect on the sports world, effect on you and your everyday life as well. Thank you very much for joining us. Scott Rintoul's show fires up tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. I will talk to you then right here on your home of Canucks Hockey, Sportsnet 650.